What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
This episode is brought to you by PwC. When unprecedented times are all the time, it's time to start walking the talk. Leaders like you turn to PwC to see and stay ahead. Upskill your workforce, use intelligent automation, and transform big ideas into breakthrough reinvention. Explore the human-led, tech-powered solutions that help you reinvent. It's all part of the new equation. Learn more at pwc.com.
On Brand is brought to you by Brand Driven Digital, helping you build better brands online through strategic consulting, digital coaching, and training and events. Learn more at branddrivendigital.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week's guest is Brian Fanzo. Brian is a leading voice of the millennial generation in digital media. He has 10-plus years experience managing, deploying, and training enterprises and small businesses on cybersecurity, community management, collaboration, digital marketing, video conferencing, and social business. As a technology and social media strategist, Brian's presented at numerous technology conferences, as well as quarterly presentations for the federal government Joint Chiefs of Staff and on-site in Iraq and Afghanistan for the United States Army. His passion for change and people is evident as he delivers keynotes on topics ranging from employee advocacy and social selling to personal branding. He was recently awarded the Top 25 Social Business Leaders of 2014 by IBM and the Economist Intelligence Unit. Brian, welcome to On Brand.
Thanks so much for having me. Excited to have the conversation, and always fun to talk to different audiences in the podcasting space. So thanks again for having me on.
Absolutely. Well, this is great. As I read through that, you know, I had presented in some interesting places before, but you've got me with Iraq and Afghanistan. I cannot. I thought that talk I gave in Stockholm, Sweden, was interesting, but it's nothing on that. So impressive.
Yeah, I always like to say I introduce myself on stage as a change evangelist, and I laugh because I say, you know, not only has my career changed, but I probably have the most diverse background when it comes to social media or kind of this marketing brand space, just because I spent so much of my career in cybersecurity, Department of Defense, and with a computer science background. But it's definitely helped shape me, and I think it also has allowed me to be extremely open to learning in every possible scenario and situation, including the time I spent in Iraq and Afghanistan, in previous years.
Cool. So how did you get here? What is kind of the, let's take the elevator pitch, the elevator story on the way up. What would you tell me about how you got to where you are right now?
So for me, you know, I think a lot of what I was, you know, out of college, I went to college for computer science, and I couldn't really find a job in computer science. So I took a job, entry-level help desk job in cybersecurity. And I would say probably the very first thing that actually I learned from and, really what kind of, I guess, is the essence of my career is that, you know, I was working there for about 6 months on an overnight shift, just supporting some of the tools that were out there. And the senior manager came into the help desk area and said, who here wants to go to Korea on Monday to train the military? And I happened to have my hand up first. And he said, do you have a passport? I said, no. He said, well, can you go sit at, you know, Washington, D.C. to get a same day passport and fly to Korea on Sunday morning to teach our military the tool that you've been supporting? And I said, yes, let's do it. And directly from that kind of moment, I flew there. I trained for 4 days. And on the flight back after I landed, I got a message and said, Brian, you've been promoted to the position that, you know, someone had pretty much not given their 2 weeks notice and just quit without letting them know, and they had to be in Korea. And my volunteering for it was really not the fact that I thought I could do it better than anybody else, but really I spent the entire flight, the 13 hours, watching videos and doing a lot of studying on really what the tool was and how I could kind of make it work. So I like to say almost all of my background in tech and cybersecurity came from YouTube University and just really listening and learning. And really social media started to have a major impact on my life because I was listening and learning on YouTube and then able to reach out to those thought leaders on social media and start engaging and building these relationships. So I would go on stage at VMworld or different Gartner events, and I would be probably the youngest one on stage, yet probably the one that was known by the most amount of people. And a lot of that had really to do with the fact that, you know, I was always open to learning and being willing to try just about anything. So I left cybersecurity after really having a dream job of 34 direct reports and doing, I mean, the work I did being able to support the U.S. military was some of my favorite things I've ever done. Ultimately, it was a tough job because it was kind of like the war on drugs. If you were doing it really well, no one really noticed. Mm-hmm. But if you messed up a little bit, a drone would fall out of the sky or the network you were securing wouldn't be working. So for me, I really pivoted in my career, went to a startup and really focused to model my career after Robert Scoble and Guy Kawasaki and the side of being kind of an evangelist for a cloud computing company. And I quickly realized that my passion really wasn't for the technology. And I feel like, you know, 10 years into my career, that light bulb moment of it isn't technology that I love. It's actually the ability to have people integrate technology, grow their community, and ultimately build collaboration. And so that's kind of led me down a path of being that guy who always tried new technology to find new ways to tell a story and collaborate. And then ultimately in this, you know, in 2015, live streaming kind of fell in my lap. And it was definitely not something that I predicted that I would build a business around. But, 9 months after kind of jumping into the live streaming space, it's now, a big part of my world. And ultimately it has to do with, just like I said at the very beginning, the fact that I'm not afraid to fail when it comes to technology, but I also like to look at technology at really not for technology's sake, but really how does technology, help make our lives better and help, build our community and collaborate.
You know, that's interesting because you went exactly where I was hoping you'd leave off talking about, this past year and, live streaming. And I was going to say that's how I first learned about you was, that fearlessness around all of these new tools. And, you were, among the first there doing amazing things. So for those that might not know, and especially when this is when this episode is airing, this was, I believe, going to be one of the first ones of the new year. And since, all of this stuff, video, live streaming, is a big part of, and someone that's putting up a prediction post myself, rounding up all sorts of ideas, it is everywhere. So I think people are kind of wondering how to get their arms around it. So could you recap kind of how we got here? What exactly fell into your lap?
Sure. No, it's a great call. And for everyone that's listening, one of my caveats is that, if you haven't heard of Periscope or Meerkat or Blab or Facebook Live, that's not surprising because this technology is brand new. But ultimately, live streaming, the idea of taking video and live streaming, it isn't very new, right? I remember watching Steve Jobs talk about the original iPod on somebody's like wired hat camera that was uploaded to an FTP server through Justin.tv. TV, website. So that really isn't new. What really is new that happened in the February, March timeframe is I kind of believe it was kind of the perfect storm. It was the perfect storm of the idea that our cell phones, the cameras on the front and the back of our cell phones are now actually almost as good or sometimes even better than the web cameras we have embedded into our computers. And then ultimately, we had cell phone networks that were being able to support live streaming video and this idea of this connective, collaborative conversational video. And so the difference I feel, the difference between TV and then some of the live stream and Ustream is when Meerkat came out, the aha moment for me, and it's really how I like to explain my live streaming experiences. My aha moment happened actually on my very first Meerkat. And so this was the second day of March. So it came out the end of February. And so if you're listening to this, more than likely, it's not even a year old. That's how brand new this technology So you could adopt it anytime in 2016, and in my opinion, you're still an early adopter. There is no easy button or answer to this technology yet. But for me, I was getting paid to be in Barcelona as an influencer, and I was doing a video blog where I had my phone on a tripod or a selfie stick, and I was walking around the showroom floor at Mobile World Congress with about 75,000 other people. And I walked around and I shared all of Brian Fanzo's thoughts, all of Brian Fanzo's insights. And it was really, you know, my video blog is nothing to be that excited about. But really what I was doing was I was sharing my experience there on the showroom floor. And, you know, I got a text message that said, "Hey, Brian," it was from a friend of mine who worked at Twitter. And he said, "Hey, Brian, Gary Vaynerchuk and Ashton Kutcher are using this brand new live streaming app. You love the talk. You're all about social media. Jump on it." And I remember downloading it and seeing the little yellow icon coming. And I'm a Pittsburgh Steelers fan. So I was like, "Ooh, it's yellow. Okay, I'm already a fan." I downloaded, I clicked the button and it popped up. And said, "Enter your tweet." And immediately I was like, "Ooh, this is going to share to my Twitter audience." And I have a fairly decent Twitter audience. And I was like, "Okay, I like it already." And all I did was put the hashtag of the event in the actual in the screen. And I hit go live. And all of a sudden the back camera went live. And I was like, "Okay, well, I guess I'm live streaming." And I walked about 5 feet and someone came on. And those of you that don't know the technology, the best part about it is not the person that's on the camera, but it's actually the audience that's watching is able to comment. And those comments actually come up on the screen. And so the participatory element, the idea that you can be watching and helping shape the content, is extremely important in this technology. And so I walked about 5 feet. I was at the Dell booth, and in front of me was a Microsoft and a Samsung booth. And someone jumped on my Meerkat and said, "Hey, Brian, is that the Samsung booth? Do they have the new phone over there? Can you go over and show me the new phone?" And immediately that's when the light bulb went off to me, because I said, "Oh, wait a second, they're sitting," and this person was in Indiana, and I remember it because I had to go back and look at it, because someone sitting in Indiana was helping shape the content I was creating and relaying in Barcelona, Spain, all via my mobile phone with as simply as clicking one button. And to me, right then, the light bulb went off. Now, unfortunately, the story doesn't have a crazy happy ending, because I walked about another 5 feet and the Wi-Fi dropped and my broadcast had ended. And that's the end of my very first Meerkat. But, you know, for those that really want to understand the technology, it's based on the premise, I believe, on keep it simple, stupid. And it really is simple. I always say, you know, one of my taglines is perfect live streams suck. And the reason I say that is if you're trying to be perfect with this technology, you're using the wrong medium, because this isn't trying to be perfect. This is the idea that it's real, it's raw. You're typing in a tweet, you're pressing a button on your phone. That tweet gets sent to your audience. So everyone who follows you on Twitter or is on Twitter that is searching the conversation that you have can jump on and watch your live stream. They can add comments and you can answer your questions and answer their questions back and forth. So for me, the kind of how it dropped in my lap is I always loved storytelling. I loved building relationships on Twitter. But as we both know, and you know, I love your podcast because a lot of it comes down to the authenticity and transparency and how do you build trust. And to me, there's no better way to build trust than saying things that really politicians are really scared of saying. And it's why we don't trust politicians. They don't usually tell the truth, and they ultimately don't know how to say, "I don't know." And on this technology, people ask you questions, people engage, people come from all around the world, and you're able to answer these questions and say, "I don't know," or be real and raw. And I tell people, it takes me 18 months to build a relationship on Twitter via tweets and blog posts, and I really feel on live stream, letting someone look in my digital eyeballs, I can do that in shorter than 3 months, because I don't have to prove to them that I'm real. I don't have to make them believe that I am I'm authentic. Ultimately, they're able to tune in and watch any of my content and engage, and I get to prove it to them on a daily basis using an app that is just on my mobile device.
Wow. There was a lot there. I had about 10 questions that I kept writing down as a result of that, but I also wrote down something you said early on, talking about your aha moment. And I think that's a big struggle for brands looking at this, because it's like, why would we want to broadcast ourselves all the time, and kind of getting, you know, lost in the, you know, woe is us, we don't have anything interesting to say. And I love the nugget in there, one of many that I pulled out, was when you said that the most important person isn't the one on camera, it's all of the other people, that is, you know, I don't I don't use the tool nearly enough, but when I have, I know exactly what you're talking about. It is seeing that real-time interaction and, you know, coming full circle to what you just said, all of the hemming and hawing and hand-wringing that we do about building trust and being authentic, and in about every other form of media, it is 10, if not more, times harder than you know, the power, the impact you can have with simple video like this.
Well, you know, and I think part of it also comes down to, you know, I'm working with brands of all shapes and sizes. From enterprise, I ran the very first Periscope for IBM, the actual three-letter IBM Twitter handle. I've worked with Applebee's. I've worked with small startups. And I always comes down to, you know, someone asked me, you know, and we were talking about prediction blog posts, and I've written a lot of blog posts about, you know, 2015 just being an amazing year for live streaming. But I don't know what the future of live streaming is, but I do know that storytelling and authenticity is only going to grow in importance. And so when a brand asked me, you know, what's the value for this for me, I always ask, you know, do you have a story to tell and do you care about engaging with your community and building your audience? And I don't think anybody says no to that, right? And so then for me, this comes down to, okay, well, how do we tell your story in a real authentic way, but then ultimately ask questions? And I can tell you one of the companies that I just worked with just recently, they're building their entire first six months content calendar based on a series of Periscope streams that they did earlier in November, because what they did was they tested topics and conversations, and ultimately they listened to the audience that was watching and said, well, we thought that this is what we wanted to create in January and February, but the questions that we were getting, we weren't really answering them. So now we're going to throw away that content calendar that we had. And this is kind of like, you know, to me, this isn't mind blowing, but they're going to actually start creating content that their audience actually wants, because they actually already asked their audience and their audience gave them that input. So it's kind of that ultimate crowdsourcing meets storytelling meets authenticity. And I think it's almost naive when someone tells me, well, Brian, I think Periscope is only for people that are, you know, self-centered, ego-driven talking heads. And I always say, if it was, you know, if there was no conversation going on, if there was no back and forth and there was no comments, you might have something to say there. That might be a good trend. But I think in this world of content is king, I think great content that you create and help shaped based on your community and the conversation, I actually believe that is the king. And I think live streaming is kind of changing the game when we're talking about that.
Well, I love that whole analogy, that whole difference, because I do think that that is a hurdle for some people, that they can't get past the idea that it's some kind of a vanity exercise, that it's look at me, look at what I'm doing, as opposed to, and I think that you probably have people out there that are using it in a way, in that kind of self-centered way. But I love that that story about the brand kind of reshaping their content calendar, because I think content calendars, I think grounding and strategy is great, but I also think it's only as great as how adaptable you are to changes, to new things that you observe, because I think that you know, when you do have that back and forth, and especially in a medium that is driven by a back and forth, you know, that's where the real power comes in.
Right. And I think ultimately that, you know, it even goes into a little bit of this idea where, you know, we want to be community based. We want to have conversations, but we all have 24 hours in the day. So how do we fit this into our workflow? Right. And I'm a big fan. I always say I suffer from FOMO, or the fear of missing out. But really, that's what brands pay me to do. So I get to be the one that tries every new technology. I was on Blab early on in the days, and Blab is really live stream collaboration, Brady Brunch style. So there's four videos on the screen instead of just one. But ultimately for me, what I get to do is I get to test and tweak and figure out this technology and then really relay what the features and benefits are and then try to fit it into your workflow, because I don't believe in adding a step to your day or adding a step to the social media space or marketing space. We have so many tools and technology, but I can tell you, I'm now working on some extremely strategic ways of not only, you know, building your email marketing campaign, campaign, but I'm actually doing a paid social engagement. And when this comes out, it'll be a little bit before that big announcement, but I'm doing a paid social targeting campaign with the Super Bowl, all leveraging Periscope. And ultimately, we're taking what the audience and the community wants to know, wants to hear, and wants to have a conversation about. And then we're providing unique free content that we're targeting that audience with paid social, ultimately serving up that our potential customers and clients with exactly what they were asking for. And to me, I think that's a new way of real-time marketing that we've never had the opportunity before. And if someone's listening to this and going, well, I never thought of that before, it's because we really didn't have this medium, this conversational video medium available to us on our as simple as a mobile device. Before, it was a studio, it was polished, produced, it required legal and PR. Now, ultimately, I like to say I give people swim lanes. I tell you what not to say, what my goal and what does success look like, and then I hit the button and I say let's rock and roll. And most of the time, even halfway through the IBM first one, and I use IBM as an example because I always say if Big Blue can embrace it, what the heck is your excuse?
Yeah.
Because I don't look at them as, or I didn't look at them in the past as one that could embrace change or this fear of uncontrol. But I think two of the biggest illusions and things that I think we kind of have to realize is there's two illusions today that we kind of live in the marketing space that I think we have to throw away. And the illusions are perfection is what the customers want, because perfection isn't obtainable and perfection shouldn't be our goal, because not only do we not want it, but if you're trying to be perfect, you'll never be in real time or at the right time. And then ultimately, we have this idea that we control things. And I don't think control is something that we should even ever want to have. We want to have a strategy. We want to be real and raw. But controlling our message and controlling our content and controlling our story, we really want to start empowering our employees to tell our story and empowering our advocates to tell our story. And if we want to do that, we can't control the message. And I can tell you, I worked with Applebee's and I had one of the live streamers, and this is all we said. We sent them a gift card and I said, hey, here's a gift card. Go in and enjoy the two free appetizers. Live stream your experience with your family. And one of my friends, Ryan Bell, who actually is the founder of the Periscope Summit, was there with his wife and daughter, and they were looking over different things in the menu, and he said, oh my goodness, I didn't realize they had the calorie counts on the new Applebee's kids menu. That's pretty cool. And Applebee's, it went crazy. It was like the perfect raw moment. But if I would have controlled that message and told him, only point the camera at the appetizers and only talk about what you were there for, ultimately, I wouldn't have got the greatest nugget of them all was a real dad's opinion of of the new menu that Applebee's had rolled out. So I think I use that as an example of this idea that we can have swim lanes, we can have a strategy, but if we realize that nobody wants perfection and control isn't obtainable, live streaming isn't as scary as many might feel in this idea that you can press a button and who knows what shows up.
Well, it's funny because you're talking about the illusions of perfection and control and, being especially challenging hurdles to get over as you approach, live streaming. But I also think, those are illusions that are, pretty much all forms of new media. If you have those two illusions, you're going to have a lot of trouble, but especially so on this side of things. I'm admittedly a word nerd, and we talk about social video, live streaming, all of this. You've called it this a couple of times, but I really like the idea of it being conversational video, and that to me is one of the real differentiators. The real, I think I'm circling the tank here. I said the same thing before, but that's really, I think, a standout way of defining why this is special, as opposed to you could stream video before, but not in this way.
Right, and I related to kind of Twitter chats, and Twitter chats are pretty funny because there's so much noise going on in Twitter. I love Twitter for the reason that it's a fire hose of unfiltered communities, is what I call it. But I also hate Twitter from the idea that when you're getting a brand on there or a new user on there, the to find out who's engaging and where the conversation is and really to find value takes a lot of work. And I love Twitter. Twitter's helped change my life. But ultimately, there's also this element of I understand. understand the pain points of how do you create conversations. And Twitter chats are just a hashtag that is a glue for conversation. And I think the live streaming, actually, you as the broadcaster end up being that hashtag and the glue for the conversation, really facilitating the story and the experience that you're sharing, but you're letting other people to not only participate in it, but to feel a part of it. I can tell you, my most successful South by Southwest Meerkats, and I was on the leaderboard. It's kind of one of my most proud moments of 2015. I was on the leaderboard, and Gary Vaynerchuk was number one. I was number two, and Jimmy Fallon was number three. And I was like, I took a screenshot of that early on in Meerkat days. But it was funny because, you know, I live streamed at like the different parties that I was at and the Sprinklr VIP event and all these different events. But my most popular piece of content was actually every morning I got out of the Uber about a mile away from the South by Southwest event where I was doing a keynote or a panel. And I would give a preview of the day and recap the day before. And the crazy part was like going back and reverse engineering that and asking people, well, why was that more important than even the parties that I was at? And it was because to them, I was allowing them to not only participate in what they couldn't experience, but they were kind of interested, and they kind of built a relationship with me where the next day they wanted to hear how great my day was the previous, because they kind of almost had that bond with me that, you know, if I had tweeted out like, hey, I'm excited to go to these three events, that sounds very cool, but you don't have that kind of relationship, that authenticity that you have. And I mean, you know, I was getting, you know, 1,400 to 1,800 people watching me walk down the streets of South by Southwest previewing my day. And I think if a brand can take that experience, a brand, you know, from a brick and mortar thing, you know, I will challenge anyone who wants to tweet at me. Give me an industry and I will give you an example of how you can use Periscope. And, you know, for a brick and mortar, if you have a, you know, you have a store where you're, you know, you have retail store, I always say, you know, why don't you do a every Saturday morning before you, you know, set up the clearance rack or the front window in your display, do a Periscope and send it out to your email audience and say, hey, I'm going to explain to you my thought process on why I have this displayed in the front window and why I pick certain things to be on a clearance and why this store means so much to me, because it's, you know, my grandmother inspired me to do clothes early on, and I care about customer service. And it's really, that's the stories, that's the piece that I believe will separate the businesses in the future. Because if you want me to not use Amazon, which I actually love Amazon, and you want me to get in my car and go buy from a brick and mortar store or for a brand that actually has a story, I need to know that story, and I need to feel like I can participate in that story. So if I could say, hey, I love that you set up your clearance rack, but why is there no men's clothing on there? Or why is there no men, you know, really allowing input, and really for that customer and that brand at that store, they're now able to really shape what they're doing in their company and their business in real time by simply using something that's a free app that is pushed out to your audience. So for me, that piece of it is so raw and so real, and it's definitely a different mindset. It's not your traditional marketing or lead gen. Now, I will tell you, I do some influencer marketing where I demonstrate tools on Periscope. I will do lead gen campaigns where I will drive traffic to a specific landing page. But I think ultimately, if a brand wants to figure out like really the secret here, it's you know, my philosophy is called think like a fan. And what that means is, what would your fans love to see? I love Converse shoes, and I wear Chuck Taylor shoes. I would love to see Converse go into their factory and interview people that have been working there for years on how the shoes have changed or maybe not changed, and then interview somebody that's, you know, that is one of the designers of their new shoe, because now they have this new footing coming out, and how much change it took to go from a shoe that's been around and never changed for 30 years to it's changing now. Because I think that's what ultimately builds that brand advocacy and that trust and that relationship, that I'm going to buy the shoe even if it goes up in price because I care about it and I have that kind of attachment to what they're doing.
I love that. I love that concept of thinking like a fan. I mean, I think that that's, you know, kind of the big head scratcher for people of, okay, well, where does this start? What do we show people? You know, one thing I've thought of throughout all of this is, you talk about, you know, it's been less than a year. It's not too late to roll up your sleeves, jump in and start playing around. And maybe this is an elementary question, but I have to ask it. And especially being a brand guy, I'm interested in it in a meta way, because you do have two similar brands here. And this feels like the the digital marketing nerd's version of the boxers versus brief question, but Periscope versus Meerkat. Go.
Ooh, I love it. So if you asked me this a couple months ago, I was all in on Meerkat, not just because it was black and yellow and a Steeler fan, but because I was really, you know, I believe it's about knowing where your audience is. And I don't think there's really one right answer for any of these tools. But I think for me, one of the things that I really have learned recently was that I've worked now with over 50 different brands on leveraging live streaming. And some of them said no, some of them said yes. And I presented the features to all of them on Meerkat and Periscope. And the crazy part is a lot of them actually like the features on Meerkat better than the features that are on Periscope. But the problem became, if they're already embracing change and risk with this whole new live streaming, they didn't want to embrace risk and change in the app that they were using. Mm. And Twitter owns Periscope. Meerkat is your traditional startup. And I'm never one for like the gorilla versus the startup. But for me, I think part of it comes down to, if you're building your community from scratch now on live streaming, Periscope makes sense for a lot of people because it's owned by Twitter. It's kind of plugged directly in. Now, just recently, just in the last couple of weeks, Facebook also rolled out their own live streaming, where they, if you have the verified page, you can actually live stream from your page using an app called Mentions. But if you actually have just a normal, you know, user account, eventually you're actually going to have Facebook Live as well. And Facebook adds a whole nother element to it, because now you have your captured audience that already knows who you are. And I like to think of it, and this is kind of how I wrap my head around it. I don't think of it as Periscope and Meerkat as much now, because I do feel like Meerkat is starting to fade in the brand recognition side of the house. But I actually think of it as, you know, Periscope is kind of the idea of growing your email newsletter. And I'll put it in that way. So when you want to grow your email newsletter, yes, you want to talk to those that are already subscribed, but ultimately you want to engage with the world. You want people to share it. You want everyone to kind of pass the buck. You want massive amplification. And because Periscope shares to Twitter, and Twitter, you don't have to follow me on Twitter. You don't even have to know who I am on Twitter to discover my live Periscope by simply searching the hashtags that I'm using in the title or searching the name. It allows you to grow that kind of broader audience. And then I look at Facebook, and I look at Facebook as your email marketing content, where Facebook, if you're broadcasting from your Facebook page, or even if you're empowering your employees to broadcast from their own Facebook Live account, ultimately, they're able to actually broadcast to the people that already know them, already like their page. So that's your email. That's your email subscribers. So now you're able to provide that ultimate value directly to them in a real, raw, live atmosphere. So I actually think the conversation in 2016 will be, what is my strategy for leveraging Periscope to grow my story and tell my story to the world? And then what is my strategy for implementing Facebook live streaming to target and provide direct value to those that have already bought in, but I need to actually engage? So unfortunately, I think the conversation is probably going to switch very soon from Periscope Meerkat to Periscope Facebook. And who knows? You know, by the time this comes out, we could have three new apps. I mean, it's such a changing landscape. I just wrote a blog post that is, you know, 2015, the year of live streaming. And I went through every month from January to December of all of the change. And the funny part was, I probably got 13 emails in the last 2 days since I let that go, with people saying, well, Brian, you forgot about this. You forgot about this. And it's because it's changed so much in such a short amount of time. It's almost impossible to keep up with all the different variables.
That is awesome. Well, that was the question I was going to pivot to as we start to wrap up here, was the what to look for in 2016. I love that breakdown of Periscope versus Meerkat becoming Periscope versus Facebook and whatever lies ahead. As we wrap up, is there a brand that has made you smile recently?
Well, it's actually probably one of the brands that's made me smile the most in 2015. And I can tell you, I'm a big fan of transparency and community. And, you know, a tool for me when you're a brand or you're a software vendor, you know, understanding, you know, you can say that you trust your employees, you have transparency, you want to build a community, but it's really hard to prove that because it takes a lot of work. And I'm actually right now, as we're recording this, I'm drinking out of a water bottle that my favorite brand, Buffer, who makes the social scheduling tool, buffer. They sent me they've probably sent me this year alone 8 handwritten thank you notes, and just saying thank you, Brian, for participating in our Twitter chats. Thank you, Brian, for participating in our beta community. You know, and ultimately for me, the reason they make me smile is because when I think of Buffer, I don't think of the tool. I don't even really think of the logo. And I can tell you right now on my laptop, I actually have their 10 values, which is one of their stickers they have. I have that on my laptop. And that's actually, I don't even think of that their values. What I actually think about are the people that make up Buffer, because Buffer allows their employees to be engaged. I'm now really good friends with 15 or 18 different people that are behind a software tool that I use every day. But the reason they make me smile is because I know the people that are behind it. And, you know, not to mention I'm drinking out of a pretty cool water bottle they sent me for a holiday side. So yeah, big shout out and love for Buffer across the board.
I'm frantically scribbling it down. I love the idea of, I don't think about the tool, but you think about the people behind it. That is a great story. So, Brian, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
So I'm a big believer in consistency. So my Twitter handle, my name is that I'm known by is iSocialFans, and it's kind of a play on my last name being Fanzo, and then I'm an Apple fanboy, so the lowercase I is for the I products. And then at one point I had 8 Twitter accounts, so I had to make each one was something fans, and so I had Pittsburgh fans, Steeler fans. So for me, everything is iSocialFans. So iSocialFans.com is my website where you can see, I'm a speaking at numerous events. I think right now I have in the first 3 months I have 17 different events that I'll be speaking at in 2016, and then I also do kind of the influencer marketing, where my new philosophy now is really I want a quarterback influencer and live streaming events where you can pay me and let me help you design a strategy, and then I will actually find the right influencers and the right live streamers to actually help amplify your message. So you don't have to be a professional in the live streaming space or understand exactly who in the live streaming space is right for you. So yeah, everything for me is iSocialFans.com, and the joke is, if you want to get a hold of me, don't email me, don't text me, tweet me, and I'll probably get back to you faster than anything else. So yeah, iSocialFans on Twitter as well.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our notes over at Brand Driven Digital. Brian, thanks for being on the podcast with us.
Nick, thanks so much for having me on. I'm a big fan. I love the work that you're doing, and can't wait one day to meet up, and maybe we'll do a Periscope together.
Awesome. Here's hoping. And a reminder, if you heard something on this episode that you liked or another, be sure to give us a shout on Twitter, as Brian noted, using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. Speaking of, this week in our community, Dave Delaney gave us a shout on our episode with Amber Naslin. So big shout to both Dave and Amber. Last but not least, you can find links to everything that we talked about over at branddrivendigital.com. You can subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and RSS. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating or review, help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe. This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.